ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
He kōna e ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, this is comedian and depressed alcoholic James Nokise, and you're listening to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower, a podcast about headspace and happiness from my safe place, The Shower, with fried chicken. This episode, I'm talking to broadcaster, author, and Fijian minister's son, Wallace Chapman. We'll talk about dealing with chicken leftovers.
Cold as gold.
Cold as gold.
Cold as gold.
Dealing with your Pacific family.
After my dad died, one of my uncles saying, you always got to remember, us coconuts got to stick together.
And dealing with terrible news.
I've always latched onto humour as a way to cope.
Some of this will get a bit real. The language, the subjects. So make sure you're in a safe space with your comfort food. And join us. Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower. Bulla vanaka, my brother.
Hey, Bulla. Here we are. It's good to be here, James. It's good to be here.
It's lovely to have you. And, of course, I say Bulla because you are my Fijian brother.
How about that?
Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people know
that. Well, it's not something you advertise. Well, I advertise necessarily. It's, you know, it's a personal thing, isn't it? It's a family thing. But no, that's right. I mean, my background is, you know, I come from a mixed family. Mum Pākehā and Dad Wallace Senior. He's from a little village called Whangarāwhi, which is on the island of Levuka. It's really funny though, eh? Every second person who comes up to me in summer and goes, "Hey, you're looking very tanned." I go,
but we do, right? Mixed race kids.
I tan very, very fucking well. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Very, very well.
I remember seeing a photo of you and you tanned up. You're on holiday with the family. It was off season, so you had your beard coming in and the curl was coming out. And I went, there he is. There's my bull of a knucker,
that's
brother.
That's right. Yes, yes. So back when I was sort of 17 in Nelson College, my nickname was Fro.
Your name was Fro?
Hey, Fro.
Well,
a couple of reasons. Because I did have an afro, and it was a big one. You know, I mean, my hair moved in a different walking to me, you know. I moved one step and my hair moved two.
Were you also the only Fijian in Nelson?
Well, it wasn't a particularly a multicultural space, Nelson, back at the time. I can always recall, because I'm from... Dad was a Methodist minister, and he was a minister for Monaro Methodist.
Right.
So I'm from Monaro. That's where I was born. That's where I grew up.
Right.
And
see, that's legit. That's legit Pacific. Methodist minister in Manurewa.
It's actually very true, isn't it? Yeah, that's right. No. Talking about it, I mean, the memories just flood back. I mean, they were very special times for me. I mean, they're rich. Rich memories. And so, you know, the memories are of going to hear Dad preach in Monaro Methodist, very, very much a Pacifica congregation.
Yeah.
So I grew up very ensconced, not just with Dad's family, but also too, you know, the sort of the Cook Island, the Samoan congregation, the Tongan. And Dad had this big thing where, which is actually quite unusual, where he said, we're not going to separate out the races to have their own service, you know, as you might have now. You might have the English-speaking service at 9, and you have the Tongan service at 10, and then the Cook Island service at 11, and the Samoans. He goes, we're all one.
Yeah.
We're all one. Ka pai, come on board. And so, I mean, for me as an eight-year-old, I mean, I always call them my second family. My second, because I was a big fan and still am to this day of not just Fiji food but island food.
Yeah.
And every Sunday I would say to Dad, "Dad, could I please go to the Yusefas for lunch? They've invited me." And he goes, oh, not this time. You were the last week. Yeah. Dad, please, please. Because I love Samoan food, you know.
And you're a minister's son, so you know you're getting fed.
I was fed. So the Yusefas would put on a spread. So go down Weymouth Road and right at the end there. And before me laid out every Sunday would be the bloody green bananas and the taro and the chop suey and the corned beef and the octopus and the chicken and the polisami. I mean, God,
polisami, mate.
All this island. It's just that's when I become an islander.
Yeah, right.
When I talk about the food,
well, we better get the food open then because
and the KFC.
Well, the KFC. See, this is the thing, Wallace Chapman, is that you, of course, it had to be you, have chosen the most Pacific because we have had KFC before. We have never had cold KFC the morning after. Which is the most island food anyone's ever brought into the show.
Cold as gold.
Cold as gold.
Cold as gold. It's a real deal.
Because this is, like, and I know some of you listening.
This is a treat, by the way.
This is
pretty cool. I haven't had cold KFC since I was like 10.
Yeah. I don't think I've had it for quite some time either. Is the memories coming back, Chapman? Nostalgia?
They really are, eh?
But this is what we grew up with. I grew up in the same Samoan minister household. My father had a very similar attitude, multicultural church. Mm. So he had morning
service. Your father was a minister?
Yep. Samoan minister.
Bloody hell.
There we go, man.
This is a weird sort of
But down thing in Petone. Going. Down in Petone.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Yeah.
When it comes to KFC, and why I chose KFC was because it was a little bit of a treat. Mm. Wasn't often eaten because it was seen as a treat. Mm. But when you had a treat, it was often a bucket of KFC. But what was better than KFC on the night? KFC for breakfast.
Because wake up, you're like, oh, what am I going to eat? You have open the fridge.
You have a sleepover at Nana's.
Yeah.
Nana Chapman. Yes, it was the... it was KFC in the morning. Mm. You know, I mean, my Nana was black with an afro.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean... To all intents and purposes, she was that Fijian matriarch. Mm-hmm. Extraordinary person, you know. Mm. The whole family gathered round her. Mm. They were strongly and proudly Fijian people. Mm. Dad really wasn't like that. His icons were... here's an example, right? So in about the 70s, he said to his congregation, this is Monroe Methodist, he goes, you all need to know... You're from the Cook Islands, you're from Samoa, you're from Fiji, but we need to know about the Māori world. Mm. We don't need to know about multiculturalism. We need to know about something more important than that. And they said, what's that? Because biculturalism.
Wow.
Because the treaty and the relationship between Pākehā and Māori is one of the more important things facing New Zealand. Mm. So you know what he did?
What?
This is Monroe Methodist. He got a young lecturer to come out. She'd written a book called Hui, I think it was called Hui, and that person was Damien Salmond.
Really?
Dad got her to come out to Monroe Methodist to have a little chat about the Māori-Pākehā relationship and why that's important for us as Pacific Islanders to know about.
You look like a Pacific minister there, holding the chicken, righteously telling off the congregation. That sparked a childhood memory of mine.
No, this is Sunday lunch. This is Sunday lunch.
Do you think of yourself as Fijian? With all that, with the way your father talked about as being a New Zealander.
No. Identity is something I've long thought about.
Mm.
And I do not see myself as Fijian. So, for example, when I put down on a passport, I'll often go European New Zealander, you know?
European New Zealander. So it's a bit... I put New Zealand.
It's fraught. It's a fraught one. You know, I've kind of recently thought more about it, you know, in terms of... as people sort of start reclaiming their identity, rightfully so.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, James, you know, look at me, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And even though I have a, very ensconced in a Pacifica upbringing, of which I'm very, very proud of, and I have an understanding and a feeling of where Dad and family comes from, and I know that this is an issue of great topicality right now, and that is of race and racism.
Mm.
But I can recall some of the small inklings of subtle and not so subtle racism Dad used to have.
Mm.
You know, and thinking, you know, he's had to deal with that, but I haven't had to deal with anything.
Mm.
I've, to all intents and purposes, I've breezed through life. Yeah. Not having been told, not having been called boy, you know, like he used to be called.
Yeah.
You know, so mum said to me, he often used to get called boy a lot. Hey, boy, until dad one day snapped. These are employers.
Right.
Saying, if you say that to me one more time, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm sick of you calling me boy. Just stuff like that, James, you know?
Yeah.
We go to a person's house, and this is in St. Helier's Bay, and here I am, I'm with Dad, and this she's pretty, this Pākehā lady, she's a nice lady, she's a nice person. Mm-hmm. She leans down and goes, you know, young Wallace, your father is such a good class of Islander. He's such a good class of Islander. And I look up at Dad, and Dad looks down at me and winks. And I wondered what was going through his mind. And we were laughing on the way home, and Dad says, hey, behave there. Remember, I'm a very good class of Islander. Well, these constant put-downs. Now, I haven't had to deal with any of that at all. So I that's why I put myself in the Pākehā camp.
Mm.
And even though when I'm around my Fijian side of my family, I'm to all intents and purposes, it's quite extraordinary, they see me as Fijian.
Right.
Not as a New Zealander or a Pākehā.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I can remember when after my dad died, and one of my uncles saying, you know, Wallace, these are hard times for us. You got always got to remember, us coconuts got to stick together. Us coconuts got to be staunch. And I go, okay, uncle.
Had you ever thought of yourself as a coconut?
No. No. No, I hadn't, you know.
Were you more of a pistachio?
Very, very pistachio, you know. Very, very, maybe an almond, you know. Maybe an almond, not a coconut. It was very interesting. I thought long and hard about it, and I've always remembered that. Us coconuts got to stick together. Fucking hell.
Eating fried chicken in the shower for safety reasons. Refrigerated fried chicken should only keep for half a day.
When you talk about challenges, I went through a particular and very unique and a fundamental challenge to me. In my early 20s, I was in a lot of pain, a lot of physical pain.
Mm-hmm.
And to manage that pain, often drugs wouldn't be enough, you know. You'd have to sort of think about, okay, how do you get through the day? Because I was on a walking stick. How do you manifest? How do you just get through from the morning to the evening without too much physical pain? And being able to slow the day down, being able to think about your context and your situation kind of helped me get through it. I mean, another word for it is mindfulness, which is very, very much a sort of quite a cliched or very overly used word now.
Mm.
But back then, not a lot of people knew about it, you know?
Right.
But what happened was, I was a long distance runner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And running about sort of 112, 115 Ks a week. I mean, it was my, man, when you talk about sort of meditation, the meditation for me was being on the road and hearing the pum, 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 pum. It's a real thing amongst long-distance runners, you know? But over time, over 6 months, something weird happens. I'm starting to sort of run and getting sore, my left leg's getting sore. And over the next 6 months, it gets sorer and sorer and sorer until I'm not running my 15 Ks a day, whatever it is. Mm. I'm like running 7 and then down to 3 and then down to, oh my God, I can't even run to the end of the road. But I'm still walking at this stage. So I'm still walking to varsity.
Yeah.
So I thought, fuck. So I stopped running.
Yeah.
And I'm still walking to varsity. So I'm still walking. I go to the GP, physio.
Mm.
So I get the physio, and he goes, yes, you've got the certain hip capsulitis. All runners get that. Mm. So I go on physio. The physio makes it worse. I'm in this terrible pain, James. And then all of a sudden, something happens. I can hardly walk to varsity. And I'm going, my God, I can't walk to university, which is about a 2K walk.
Mm.
So by this time, I'm getting quite sick. I go and have another checkup to the doctor, get my bloods taken. And then after about a year of this, I get a phone call by my GP. And he says, well, actually, Dr. Charles Newhooker, who's a hematologist. And he goes, could you just come and see me at the hospital? And he goes, sure, absolutely. I'll make a time with your receptionist for next week. He goes, no, could you come today?
Hmm.
He goes, today? What, you mean now? He goes, yeah, come now if possible. And he sits me down. He goes, right, you've got certain things going wrong with you. You've got, you're a skinny guy, but you've got a massive belly. He goes, yeah, my belly's huge. Yeah, you've got a huge spleen. It should be the size of a small fist. Mm. It's the size of a 2-liter bottle of milk.
Oh, wow.
He goes, you're bruising a lot? He goes, yeah. And you've got a bad hip. Yeah. He goes, you, sir, have got a very rare disease. And he goes, so from now you go to the blood specialist, you go and see the bone specialist. And the bone specialist, what was his name? Professor A.K. Jeffries, this esteemed teaching professor.
Mm.
And he clicks up the scan and he goes, look at your hip.
Mm.
And it's almost worn away. And he goes, you've got this very rare disease that only 20 people have in New Zealand. I go, what's it called? And he goes, it's called Gaucher's disease, which is G-A-U-C-H-E-R-S.
Gaucher's.
Yeah, he goes, what is it? He goes, well, it's a blood disease, but long story short, you've got these particular lipids in your body that for most people can be made soluble, but for some reason you can't get rid of them. Where do they get stored? In your organs. What are your organs? Your spleen, your lungs.
Mm.
For some people, your brain. You can get brain damage.
Right.
And your bones. And they've been stored around your hips, and it's breaking your hip. And I go, oh, my God. He goes, that's right. That's right. And he sits down, and he goes, Gaucher's disease. Very rare. And I go, what happens now? And he goes, well, you go and see the nurse and she'll give you a walking stick. And I was on a walking stick for 10 years, all through my 20s.
Wait, that was it? That was all they did?
That was it. And I went to the chapel and I can remember I was all alone, Dunedin, student, dad died. And I went to that chapel and I cried. I cried for the whole afternoon. Just sit in that chapel, just by myself, with this fucking walking stick, just going, check this out.
Yeah, man.
I've got a walking stick. Yeah, it was an epiphany, James. It was quite something. It was quite something. I had a disease. I walked in healthy. I came out sick. And it was the start of a very, very long journey.
How old are you? When this happens?
When that happens, I'm in my early 20s.
Early
20s. 23.
So your dad's just died.
My dad died very recently, about a year before.
So your dad's died within a year, and then your running decreases, and then you get this disease.
Yeah.
And now you're in a church crying.
Yes. It's a very lonely time. It's tough. That was my bottom. That was my rock bottom. One of my rock bottoms.
Because that's a very large amount of life-changing trauma all at once there.
I was very lonely. Very, very lonely.
Did you have, were you sociable back then? Did you have friends?
I was a bit of a loner. I mean, I wasn't antisocial by any means.
Mm.
But when my hip started getting bad, I couldn't go out.
Right.
You know, I couldn't get out. What happened? I had this disease. I stopped my varsity and I went on the dole. Yeah. I went on the dole. I was on the dole. Yeah. I was on the disability for about 3 years.
So
2 years, 3 years.
So let me ask you, Wallace Chapman. I know you don't get nervous. Do you get bitter?
No, I don't. I don't get bitter.
There was no bitterness in that time.
There was no bitterness. There was no bitterness. There was no sort of, why me?
Yeah.
You know, it's a funny thing looking back. I can't. And people watching this, people will have their own ways of confronting deep crises in their times. But I never really went too inward. I just never did. What I did do is I powered down my life because I couldn't see any way out. So I was in a lot of pain then, so I couldn't focus on my studies. And so my life over those 3 years consisted of, you know, waking up, walking stick, turning on national radio, actually. There was a bit of a friend during that time, or Radio 1.
Hmm.
Opening the paper, eating toast, midday comes, what's on TV?
Yeah.
I couldn't afford a taxi because the disability allowance would only allow you for a kind of a one taxi, so I'd go out for a coffee a week. I mean, seriously, my life was...
So you're landlocked.
I was very, very landlocked. And I could find no way out. And I suppose where I'm getting to in this is that why did I never go inward? Why did I... There was something protecting me. There was some shell protecting me in terms of sort of how I managed in terms of anxiety or depression. I mean, I can recall sometimes there are moments in physical pain or manifestations of pain where you get these glitters of gold that you just have to laugh. And they're part of life, they're part of the fabric of life. And one of them was, so I come out of hospital and here I am. Part of it's humor, having a fucking sense of humor. And I can remember just going, holy hell, here I am at 23. I'm at home in this $25 a week dank Dunedin flat, waiting for my meals on wheels. How about this? Any minute now, the Wiener Schnitzel will be coming through the door.
Wiener Schnitzel, no less.
And so here I am. I'm in my walking frame. I've got my frame. The Meals on Wheels man arrives. But what made it extra fun is my landlord, Val Drew, he was 85. Well, he had Meals on Wheels. So he'd go, Wallace! You hear him down the hall. Doom, doom, doom. He was a big brass band fan. Doom, 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 boom, boom, boom. Wallace! He goes, Val, you didn't knock. It's my house. I don't need to knock. I said, you do. I'm the tenant. He goes, whatever. What are you having? And I goes, well, I haven't checked. He goes, open it. He goes, it's a Wiener Schnitzel again. Oh, fuck the Wiener Schnitzel. Why was it a Wiener Schnitzel? He goes, what's for pudding? Apple crumble, very good. And he goes, hey, why don't we have our Meals on Wheels together?
I'd watch that sitcom. I would watch
seriously,
that sitcom.
Seriously, they were some of the gold moments of my life. Val at the age of 85 and Wallace Chapman having their Meals on Wheels together for 4 weeks.
That's a great show.
That's a show. That's a podcast.
That's a podcast.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. It's old school Meals on Wheels.
You're 24. You're living with an 85-year-old. 61 years older than you.
Well, he's my neighbour, but he's my landlord.
Neighbour, landlord. Classic New Zealand tenant situation.
Yes.
He's got a frame and Meals on Wheels as well.
Mm.
And now you were listening to National Radio, and now you're one of the faces of National Radio. How do we end up here?
I kicked myself because.
And you walked in the door. We didn't carry you.
No, it's very true. It's very true. Leave that in. and that is where I kicked myself, because sometimes when I don't often think back, but when I think about these sort of conversations, and I go, Jesus, man, where I was. And when you talk about a dark place. I suppose that was the darkest. There was a small peephole of light, but it was very small. Mm. I mean, my life had literally whittled down. I was in pain by then, and I was on a walking stick full time. I mean, 11 steps. Now I'm a bit better. I can. All my Dunedin friends, when they see me, the first thing they go is, Wallace, where's your stick? You know? I mean, I still have these issues, but it wasn't as exacerbated as back then, put it that way. But friends, the magic of friendship comes to play. And how I got into media was my flatmate at the time, a guy called Richard Wayne. He said to me, you got to do something with your life. I said, like what? He goes, well, you just got to do something. You're better than this.
Mm.
You're actually... What are you going to do? I said, I don't know. Eat KFC, read the paper, you know? And he said, what about this? Goes, I work for a local radio station, Radio 1, shooting station. Mm-hmm. I'm an ad writer. Why don't you write this client an ad? Because I'm too tired tonight. Why don't you just have a go overnight? Write this little sort of scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And I go, oh, Okay. So I've got nothing to do. Get out the pen, get out the paper, and write down a particular scenario for this cafe in Moray Place in Dunedin. He comes back to me the next day. He goes, "Hey, Wallace, the client liked the ad." I said, "Really?" He goes, "They liked it quite a lot. Can I ask you a favour? Could you make me another one of those ads?" He goes, "Sure. I wrote a second ad." I goes, "Dude, they really liked it." A month rolls by and he goes, "Hey, well, I've got an idea. There's a part-time job going off Radio 1. Would it be interesting?" I said, "I haven't a clue about radio. I've got it now next to nothing about the media." He goes, "It's not the right job for me, but thank you." He said, "Have a go. I think you could be good." I go to the interview, hobble up there. James, I get the job.
Amazing.
I get the job. And what happened was, getting the job was only one half of the story. What happened for the first time in many, many years is I got confidence. Because I didn't realise until I got that job is that over the last 4 years, I had completely lost confidence in myself. I had zero confidence, which is, it's a very interesting phenomenon. Sometimes when I found that I was on the dole, my personality, my who I found I was, whittled down to just that little peephole of light. I didn't feel worthy of being able to do anything. And just having that job to go to, getting up with a purpose and doing this position at Radio 1, I just blossomed, James. I loved it. And I ended up being 5 years Radio 1. I was the creative director there, so I was a writer.
Right.
And that was my first sort of foray into radio, was ad writing. And then 5 years later, I get this call because I work so hard. I get a call from Radio BFM in Auckland. They say, "Hey, we've heard about your ads. Would you be interested in coming to Auckland to apply for a job as the creative director of 95BFM? And I thought, you're kidding, right? It's one of the great radio stations. For me, it was, you know.
It still is.
Yeah. Holy shit, I got the role. So in 2001, after years away from Auckland, the place that I grew up in, Manurewa, I can remember another picture comes to mind, another postcard picture comes to mind in my head right now, and it was a big thing for me, flying and landing at Auckland Airport for the first time. Because recall, being on a walking stick, I hadn't travelled out of the city for about 12 years.
So, Wallace, you don't have a walking stick now. What level are you at?
I have it still. It's beside my office up at RNZ.
Oh, right.
But I don't use it how I used to. I used to have to use it wherever I went, but not now. Why don't I have it now? Well, what happened was the journey then began. And by this time, I was too ill, you know. I mean, I was... Well, actually, I'll take you back a little bit because I've told you about the prognoses and the specialists I went to. Specialist brought me back in. I said, "Look, Wallace, this disease that you got, this rare disorder, 29 people in New Zealand that have it. There is a remedy. There is a cure." "Well, it's not a cure, but it keeps it at bay. It's a very successful drug." I said, "Thank God. Bring it on." He goes, "There's a problem." He goes, "What is it?" He goes, "It's the world's most expensive drug." I goes, "Well, how much is it? Is it $1,000 a month? Is it $2,000? Can we sort of somehow start the ball rolling?" He goes, "It's $1 million a year."
A million a year? In the 90s? Holy shit.
$1 million a year. I said, "I don't have the money." Of course. And then what happened was, time rolled along a bit, and a major study came out of Holland by one Dr. Carla Hollack, which said, if you take a tenth of this dose, it's just as efficacious as the full dose.
Okay.
And suddenly there was a window, there was an inkling. My God, it could be feasible. But this one was really ill, and I was not in the mood to sort of lobby for any drug. I thought, this is my life now. I was actually looking, to be honest with you, I was starting to look for wheelchairs.
Wow.
I was looking for, I'd made peace with my head.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be honest with you, even if it came to that, that's just what happens, you know?
Yeah.
But mum, bless her heart, she started lobbying to get this drug into the country.
Of course.
And again, it was a very, I can always remember another picture in my mind is me sitting on the edge of a bed in a motel, mum, recently widowed at the age of 47, with these packets of medical literature.
Yeah.
Going around the country, busting around the country, flying where she had to, going to the likes of Jenny Shipley and I think it was Timaru, and saying, my son needs this drug, as do the others. It's
good mumming.
It's very good mumming. And she really as a person who knew nothing about medicine,
yeah.
she stepped up to the most extraordinary degree. In fact, so much so that only recently, just last year, she was presented with an award.
Yeah.
Yeah, of a person who was able to, you know, cross those boundaries, you know, as a housewife, you yeah. know, as a house manager, and sort of now all of a sudden sort of a major advocate as she came to be, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, to cut a long story short, after many years, the facts came through. Ceridase has been funded for New Zealand patients for Gaucher's disease.
Wow.
So it was the Pharmac had approved this particular drug for our particular rare disorder.
Hmm.
Now, it is the sole reason I'm talking to you now, and I probably have a role in a career, is because I was able to get access to a drug that enabled me to do this.
How long did your mum campaign?
It was for some years, and it was pretty hard. I mean, the issue got to Parliament, because, of course, this is the sort of high cost.
Mm.
I mean, it's a very, very topical issue in the news right now, and I really feel for others today who don't get access to medications. But this one was approved. It was approved 15 years ago, and that's what I have been on. Mm. So every month or so, I go up to the hospital and I get an infusion of this particular drug.
Mm.
And that enables me, James, to sort of, get on with my life and have otherwise a fairly ordinary life.
Right.
It's basically why I'm still working.
Right.
Yeah. So, Mum, I'm saving you that last piece. I'm saving you the last half piece for you, Mum. So thank you very much. I do appreciate it. I mean it. Actually, they're all bones now, so... yeah, sorry.
Eating fried chicken in the shower. Share the chicken with your mum, not the shower.
I want to go back, Wallace, just quickly to that incredibly dark moment with this little series of very heavy traumas. And you're talking about a shell that can protect you from anxiety, from depression. Have you, over the years, reflected on what that shell is or where it comes from?
I have, because people ask me.
Mm.
Yeah, I've been asked quite a bit about it, because even recently a colleague said, yeah, you're limping around a bit, you have a bit of pain, but you don't seem to sort of let it affect you like it can with others. I'm gonna be really honest with you and just say I don't have an answer for you. You know, I'd love to sort of be able to put that in a bottle and share it because it is something that I have been asked about quite a bit in terms of a coping mechanism when you, be it physical pain or be it just a tough time, be it depression. Or having said that, what I've gone through isn't clinical depression. I'm going to say that right now, But I can only imagine having that.
Mm.
But in terms of coping mechanism, I tried to find what it is. One thing I think is I've always latched onto humour as a way to cope, you know? Like, for example... when I had my operation and I had Meals on Wheels at the age of 24, I couldn't help but seeing that as some sort of fucking sitcom that I'm living through, you know?
Yeah.
I couldn't help seeing the darkly comic side of it, you know? And so that sort of latching on to a dark side of humour has really, really helped me cope, you know what, you know what I'm saying?
Mm. Hey, now can I ask, minister's son to minister's son, you're in your dark moment back in Dunedin when you're 24, and I noticed you said you went into the church.
Yeah.
Like, was that a safe space for you? Was that tapping into...
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Because are you a man of faith? Have you still got... Are you more agnostic?
I'd have to say no. Yeah. I mean, that's a really good point, and I've never really thought of that, but that's the first thing I went to. I mean, I went to the church chapel. That's the first thing I decided to do. Isn't that interesting? I never thought about it. And I sat the whole afternoon. James, at the moment in society and in the media right now, the current topic now is Christianity, conservative Christianity and conservative principles around Christianity.
Mm.
Some of the kindest people and some of the kindest teachings I've known are from Christians, the Christian faith. There'll often be a focus on the Brian Tumaki side of Christianity.
Mm.
But there's another side of Christianity, which means preferencing those who have less, helping the poor, giving justice to people who deserve it.
The Christian side of Christianity.
Well said. I've never thought about it like that. The Christian side of Christianity. Of course, of course. But that is the case. It's treating people with respect. It's treating people with empathy and humanity.
Mm.
How hard is that? Dad gave me a lot of that. You know? He really did. He really did. It's you can treat people with respect, first and foremost, with empathy, you know? And to me, that is what Christianity is about. Not the sort of evangelical tamaki style Christianity. I don't see that as Christian or Christian based, you know? So when you ask me, I'm a man of faith, person of faith, I probably say on the surface, no, you know, no, not at all, no. But I do have great respect for the principles of what I see as the Christian faith. Yeah.
Is there any form of guilt when you're on the sickness benefit? You know, the communities we grow up in, again, there is a stigma.
There is a stigma, and it's one of those experiences that form oneself. And I look back on these pretty challenging times, and they've helped shape me, man. I mean, I do have an insight, which I regard as pretty special, of knowing what it was like living on the dole.
Yeah.
Not pretty.
Yeah.
Not pretty, man. It's very, very hard to live. It's tough.
There's not so many people in mainstream media who would have that.
No.
Particular...
And also, too, back at the time, and I do know that this is still an issue for some, and it was beautifully captured in Ken Loach's New For My Daniel Blake. But the way that Winstaff talk to you when you're a customer is pretty patronising, very rude, quite aggressive, and highly belittling. And that was one of the reasons why, ironically, you know, it's very hard to look for work, because often attitudes can be so belittling, you feel like nothing. You feel you're not worth going out to work, because you're subtly told that you're not worth it, you know? It's not an environment where it's aspirational. It should be, you know? There should be people behind the desk who say, you know, we realise you're in the situation. I know you don't want to be here, or the vast majority don't want to be here for any particular length of time. How can we make it happen that you can get some work, you know? So that was really, really tough. And if I may say so, I mean, there were some people who really got me through. I mean, I couldn't even afford. I was penalised financially for a couple of meetings I didn't make, ironically, because I couldn't afford to get to those meetings, because I didn't have enough taxi chits, you know, and I'm on a walking stick. I mean, how does that work? But I bonded with can I have a bit of a shout out to a Dunedin guy?
Absolutely.
Who I bonded with at, who was working at Wins for a while. And he was the first person I made contact with who really humanized me. And his name is Hiliako Ihito. And hi, Hiliako.
Hi, cousin Hiliako. Can't warn me before you shout out other family members on my own podcast.
And here he is, and he's my case services manager. He goes, I'm going to be your case services manager. And he goes, I've known your case files here. You enjoy music. And I go, yes, yeah, I do. He goes, what sort? He goes, oh, I love funk. Prince, you're a Prince fan. and I go, oh, hello, what do you like? He goes, Adaja, oh, dong 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 dong, a boom 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 boom. Okay, and he goes, that's pretty good. I go, hey, I'm a Adaja fan too, and we really bonded over music. We really bonded. So you've got this sort of case manager and me bonding in the sort of tough environment of Wins over Adaja and Prince. But he said, hey, there are entitlements that I can give you that I'm not supposed to tell you. I go, why are you not supposed to tell you? He goes, well, we're not supposed to say. I go, well, that's wrong, isn't it? You know? It was the 90s was a very tough time for people on benefits. And recall Jenny Shipley, of course, and under her watch, the entitlement dropped off a cliff for many people, you know? So it was a big deal. So to get this job at Radio 1 and to get the job at BFM, it was the real start of my being back to Wallisi, being back to who I was. Yeah, very special. Here I am today,
in the shower.
Eating cold chicken, no less, with James Mukise. Well, holy shit.
In the grand tradition of two media people in Auckland in a bathroom, could you pass the coat?
Now, this is a treat. Very rarely do I have coke.
Me too. You know? Now, look, this is not an endorsement.
Often what we would do at home, the nanas, was we'd wash cold chicken down with a nice cup of tea. A cup of tea.
Oh my gosh.
A cup of tea.
That's like,
we've smashed this, haven't we? Look at this.
We'll have to put a photo up. This has been devastating. This is two mixed race kids who do not eat this or drink this anymore, just getting an excuse to ravage a bucket.
The bucket. What a treat. Holy hell. All I need now is the raw fish. The raw fish and the Samoan raw fish. Mm. That is better than the Fijian raw fish.
Oh, no, I have to say, you're going to start a fight, but it's true. Now, is there anything else that you would like to share in the shower?
Is there anything else while I have this unique opportunity in the shower with James Mukise? What else would I like to? I mean, I know a lot of it is...
Wallace Chapman, let me rephrase that. I've been thinking.
Wow, now you've really put me on the spot. Now I really am lost for words.
For any listeners unfamiliar, that was a Wallace Chapman catchphrase from his show Bag Benches.
I'm really lost for words now. There's nothing, James, really, that I can really add to what I've said. Suffice it to say that your journey's your own journey, you know, make of what you will. I certainly have. I mean, I've had some real challenges in my life. I'm not going to shy away from it. Some terrible, terrible moments where I look back and I just shudder. I mean, being afflicted with a disease that still has no ending. I mean, even as I walk after this, you know, I go, okay, all right, what's the next challenge? I've got to somehow get to my workplace, you know? That's... you know, a K and a half away, how am I going to get there? You know, that type of thing. I don't know in the future if I'm going to be in a wheelchair. I may well be, you know. I mean, the one colleague I had with Gaucher's disease in Dunedin, because it affects your body every different way, it was like a torture video, man. Mm. It was just like poor Neville, you know, his bones dissolved at such a rate that all he had was just, instead of two hips, he had two points, like a ballpoint pen, up into his flesh, you know? I mean, I go in for treatment the next week, and what else is happening? His shoulder is starting to sort of dissolve. And then the week later, his T2 and T7, two vertebrates in his spine, starting to crack. It was just terrible. So I don't know the future, you know? I don't know the prognosis for me long term. I don't know how... mobile as I'm going to be in the future, you know? But all I can do is enjoy the now. I can enjoy the present. I can enjoy kōrero with a friend. I can enjoy some cold KFC, you know? I can do what I do now. I can have a laugh and enjoy 2019. That's it.
Preach, Wallace Chapman, preach.
And it's great chicken. If you've ever tried cold chicken...
Our people, our stories, Tangata Pacifica.
Kia ora, kia ora.
Kia ora, bro. Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower was produced by Charlie Bleakley and presented by me, James Nokise. The engineer is Blair Stagpole. The executive producers are Justin Gregory and Tim Watkin. Subscribe to our podcast however you just found this podcast. Or if you're listening on the radio, go to RNZ's podcast page and look for the chicken. And when you're rating us, only give us 5 stars. Remember, more stars, more chicken. If you want to share your safe space or comfort food, tweet me at James Nokise. If you need support, text 1737. Or for more resources on mental health, check the Fried Chicken webpage on the RNZ website. Faftailava Matewa.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.